The young man who, I don't know how many of you will notice, recognizing by his face. How many of y'all know who that is? I heard his name. Tim Tebow. You may not know his face, but you probably have heard his name. Young man has gotten more media, more attention, more publicity than probably maybe anybody since Elvis or the Beatles. They just follow every move he makes. For those of you who don't know who the young man is, he is a professional football player now. Played at the University of Florida, was drafted by the Denver Broncos, and has started, or he didn't start it, but following him is a wave of publicity, a wave of attention known as Tebow Mania. Bulletin boards, billboards on the road saying, "Play Tebow." The fans just crying out for him to be put into the game. And he was, again, he was drafted by the Broncos shortly after he graduated. From college last year, I guess it was. He was part of an anti-abortion commercial that aired during the Super Bowl, or was going to air, and caused a great deal of concern from people who didn't like that. He's often been seen where athletes wear the black stuff under their eyes for glare. He'll have a Bible verse wrote on his, which you can imagine has caused some attention. He has again been followed. The media follows him. Everyone just dogs after him for every step that he makes. Every word that he says is dissected. Everything that he does is under the microscope and played and replayed. And last year again, I know, and the point is not sports, bear with me. Last year again, when he went to Denver as a rookie, like most rookie quarterbacks, he didn't get to start. He wasn't playing. When the Broncos weren't doing so well, and the fans started a big movement, a big campaign, again taking out billboards and calling in radio shows and carrying signs for the team to start to allow Tebow to play. Well, I'm not even sure exactly how. About midway through the season last year, they did allow him to start playing, and they won. They began to win, which actually, by the way, is something he's done at every level. All he's ever done is win. That's all he's ever done, but he began to be criticized. He doesn't throw the ball right. He throws it wrong. He's awkward. He ought to run the ball. And he has this horrible practice of praying. He just has this horrible, he just prays. And, they actually gave it a name. They call it Tebowing. They would see him after a circumstance in the game. He'd be down on one knee with his head down. And he was bowed in prayer, and so they started calling it Tebowing. And other athletes actually started making fun of him and started copying him, and he began to be ridiculed in newspapers. And anyway, he went on to play. The team began to win. Actually, made the playoffs. Won a playoff game that they shouldn't have won. On, by the way, a long pass that he threw. And basically, he got the credit for winning the game. And they promptly decided when the year was over to get rid of him. And they traded him to New York last week. And so he gets traded to New York, and they have a press conference to introduce him. And a lot of people are saying, well, they shouldn't have had a press conference. And the man gets criticized, and he didn't even have the press conference. The team had it. He just happened to be there. And yet he gets criticized for that. And he gets attacked for everything. And all he has done, if any of you here who have watched any sports television, have seen any interviews with him, this young man handles himself like someone way beyond his years. He at the most is 22, 23 years old, somewhere in that range. But every time they stick a microphone in front of him and try to trap him, try to catch him in something, he manages just to keep his calm, keep his cool, represent himself, his family, and his Lord. He is an unabashed, unashamed Christian. He makes no reservation whatsoever of his his relationship with Christ. And he has certainly paid the price for that, as everything he does, and it will no doubt only get worse being in New York. I will guarantee you that wherever he is right now, there is somebody nearby with a camera hoping to catch him doing something they can put on the front page of a paper. That's just the kind of lightning rod this young man has become. And he has been ridiculed by every comedian, every sports writer, every sports caster. You name it. They find something wrong, something, whether it's his faith, whether it's the way he handles himself, whether it's his skill, whatever. He has been just brutally beaten up in the media and just constantly is being attacked. He is a football player being introduced last week as a new member of the Jets, and he's being asked social issue questions like any other quarterback would be asked questions about social issues. And the interesting thing is, the question comes to mind: why is this young man such a lightning rod? Why is he so? Why is the media so determined to find something about him? Why are they so determined to attack him? Whether it's comedians, whether it's sports people, the news magazines, why is it that they all seem to be so determined to attack him? And the easy answer, the quick answer that usually comes up to that question is, well, because he's a Christian. Because he admits to being a Christian. Well, as I thought about that, I said, well, there are other athletes that say they're Christians, and nobody's ever really done them this way. Nobody has ever dogged them and followed them. There are a lot of athletes who are Christians. They're outspoken about it, but they never have really seemed to get the attention that this young man did. And as I thought about it a little longer, it became a thought to my mind, and as I began to look at it and think about it, I believe the reason that Tim Tebow has been such a magnet, such a lightning rod for criticism of all types, of everything imaginable, who has been investigated, who has been, they've looked into everything. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody right now is not going through his garbage to see what he read yesterday. He's just had that kind of draw from the media. And it came to my mind, and I believe this is the issue. It's not that he says that he's a Christian, it's that he acts like he's a Christian. There's a big difference in saying you're a Christian and acting. Now, I don't know this man. I don't know him from Adam's house cat. I will, right now I'm probably as close to him as I'll ever get, right here with his picture on the screen. I don't know him. He may fail today. I hope not. I'm praying that one of the reasons he got moved to New York is to put him on a bigger stage where he can be a bigger ambassador. That's my prayer. And I don't know him, but I hope you'll pray for him, that he'll use that opportunity, and God will protect him and place a hedge around him, that he'll continue to be a fine example for others of what a Christian can be and should be. But as I looked at his life, the question is, again, I don't think is that he's a Christian, because there have always been athletes who claim some relationship with God. There are very few of them that when they stick the microphone in their face and say, how'd everything go? Well, I want to thank God. There's a lot of them who make comments like that. But so far, this young man has managed to actually walk the talk. Not just talk about being a Christian, but he's managed to walk it. He's managed to exemplify it in everything that he has been part of. And again, I pray for him that he'll continue to be that way, that he'll use that stage, that spotlight to exemplify what a Christian can be. And as I think about that, and I begin to look, and as I was reading what Paul wrote to the Ephesians, I became aware of something I've never noticed before. In these first few chapters of the book of Ephesians, Paul has become almost enamored with the word walk, as the media seems to be with Tim Tebow. If you begin to flip through the first four or five chapters of Ephesians, you'll be surprised how many times the word walk pops up, that Paul talks about our walk, of watching our walk. If right here, if you're in Ephesians 5, this morning. You just back up a little bit in Ephesians 4. And you begin to see use of the word walk. You begin to see examples of the word walk. And when you come to chapter 5, you begin in verse 1, and he says to us to be imitators of God. And then he says, throws that word out there, and walk in love. You read a little further in that chapter, and he begins to talk about some other things. And then he says, down in verse 8, he says, "For you were once darkness, but now you're light in the Lord. Walk as children of light." And then when you get down to verse 15, he really kind of brings it home, if you will, in verse 15, when he says to us there, "Walk circumspectly. See then that you walk circumspectly, not as the foolish, but is wise." And so Paul brings this idea of our walk front and center. And he begins to bring that to us. And I think about, again, as I look at Tebow, and I think about it, most of us will never have that kind of scrutiny where the newscasters and the paparazzi are following us around, just waiting on us to make a mistake. And we'll probably never have our picture on the front page of the paper. But here's what dawned on me. You may not have the New York Times following you around. You may not have U.S. News and World Report. You may not have ESPN following you, but I will guarantee you someone is watching your walk. Someone is watching your actions. Someone is listening to every word you say. It may be your child. It may be your grandchild. It may be someone you don't even know their name who happens to eat where you eat, who happens to come to your place of business, someone who works where you work, who has heard through the rumor mill that you claim to be a Christian, and now they are sitting back and they are watching every move, every decision you make. And because of that, Paul says, watch your walk. Be careful where you walk. Look what he says. It's interesting how this chapter proceeds. If you look at it, he begins there in verse 1 by saying, be imitators of Christ. Now, when he says that, then he goes on and begins to say some things. He begins to give us some counsel. Look what he says to us. He says, the fornication, all uncleanliness, covetousness, let it not even be named among you. Paul says that we should be so cautious of our life, we should be so careful of our walk, that these things are not even mentioned along with us. Now, well, and all of us probably know someone like this, that you know, if you were going along and you heard somebody say, "Listen, you know so-and-so, you know him? Well, I think I saw him doing so-and-so." I just leave the names, and you know, what is that? The names and identities have been changed to protect the innocent. Yeah. And when you heard that, you said, "No, not him. I know he'd know. You got the wrong person." Yeah. "No, sir. Yeah. I know better than that. Yeah. I know that would never happen. I know that, yeah, you had to look at it wrong, see it wrong. You heard the wrong thing. They would never do such a thing." You know, on the other hand, you know some people, if somebody came along and said, "Hey, I saw Jim Bob, you know, and he was over there, you know, Robin Hardy's." You say, "I knew it. You know, I knew it. It's just a matter of time." You know, you know that. You know some people that when they are accused of, you know, you say, "Oh, no way. That could never be true." On the other hand, you know some people that when they're accused, you're like, "Well, is that all? You know, I saw them robbing the liquor store." And, you know, you're waiting to hear what else they did because you're not surprised by that. Well, that's what Paul is telling us here. He says we should live our life so cautiously that we are so careful that if somebody says something about us, that those who hear it and those who know us would say, no, that can't be true. No way is that true. I know them better than that." And then look what he does. He goes on and he says some other things. And he says, "Neither filthiness, nor foolish talking, nor coarse jesting, which are not fitting, but rather giving of thanks." Think about that for a minute. As Paul begins to talk about being careful of our walk, watching where we go, watching our daily activities, watching our testimony, guarding our reputation. Isn't it interesting that Paul doesn't say, "Don't be guilty of murder"? Or don't be guilty of selling drugs. Or don't be guilty of doing drugs. Paul says things like, don't be guilty of coarse jesting. Don't be guilty of conversation that's not fitting. He goes on, he says, don't be covetous. Don't be an idolater. We tend to think of what we might call the biggies. But that's not what Paul, when Paul's telling us to watch our walk, Paul doesn't say, watch out for the great. He says, watch out for these little tiny things. And as I think about that, and think about what he's saying, here's reality. Most of us are not caught up by the biggies. Think about it, in our physical walk. Most of us tend to not walk off into the Grand Canyon. We tend to not walk off the side of a mountain. We tend to not walk off of a cliff. But how many of you have ever been walking along? You look back, you're like, what'd I trip over? My old feet? That's a big boy. How many of you think about it? You think about it. I can't begin to tell you the number of times I've made hospital visits because somebody tripped over their dog, their cat, tripped over a rock, tripped over their own feet, a drop cord, Debbie's nurse here. In most of the falls you deal with, most of them from simple little. Generally, you don't have to go pick somebody up that walked off into the Grand Canyon, do you? We tend to be able to dodge those biggies, but it's those little things that Paul begins to tell us. He says we need to watch out for those things. We need to begin to watch out for those simple, small things. And he says, be careful. And he finally gets down here to this verse that I really want us to kind of hone in on for just a moment. Well, Paul says, see then that you walk circumspectly. Now, King James says that, the King James Version has this phrase, see then. Now, quite honestly, most of us read that and we see then, and we just kind of move on. That phrase doesn't really trip our trigger. It doesn't do much for us. See then that you walk circumspectly. Let's be honest. That whole statement doesn't do much for us because see then doesn't catch our eye and we don't have a clue what circumspectly means. We just kind of skim right over that verse. But let's look at it for a moment and let's talk about what he actually is saying. First of all, Paul has given us what really amounts to a really somber warning. See then doesn't sound like much to you and I. And in fact, if you have the New International Version, I think it's actually translated there as be careful. Look, be careful. Be careful, look where you walk. I forgot exactly how it's worded, but it says be careful. But let's be honest. We live in a world today where be careful doesn't even really catch much of your eye. We live in a world where everything has warning labels on it. I'm kind of amazed by some of the warning labels we run into. I can't help it. I've seen it 100 times and I still laugh every time I pull up to a drive-thru window and the sign at the window says, be very careful, hot coffee is served hot. Here's my thought. If you buy hot coffee and you pour it in your lap and you're shocked by that, you deserve to be burned. I'm sorry. That's just my world. I figure, a lot of these warning labels, let's get rid of them and we'll clean up the gene pool. We have put warning labels on everything. It is amazing the things. You just pay attention. Be careful. Be careful. Listen, you buy a new hairdryer. And you get that hair dryer out, and there are more. Most hair dryers have 2 buttons on them: off, on, hot, warm. Most preschoolers could figure them out. They have 4 or 5 pages of warnings. Don't use it in the shower. I don't need it in the shower. I'm still wet. What's the big deal with all the cautions? So we don't think much about cautions. In fact, most of us, I'm of the opinion we put up so many caution signs, we've actually caused people to not be cautious anymore. We see them so much, we just take them for granted. We end up getting in trouble because, you don't see it. I remember growing up, there was only 1 or 2 things that had that skull and crossbones on it. And they caught my eye when I saw them. I knew not to mess with them. Everything has a warning on it now. Don't do this, don't do that. I wonder who thought some of the things up they tell you not to do with some of this stuff. So we're not real cautious about it. But Paul here, let me just drive into your head here for a minute. When Paul says, see them, be careful, warning, red flags flashing, Paul is giving us a very somber warning. Don't overlook it. Don't say, well, I've saw all those warnings before. I heard about one guy who lived on a road and the bridge was out. And they had a sign sitting up there that said, road closed 1 mile ahead. And people just kept going around the sign, kept going, and you know, they just kept going by the sign. They'd go on down in a little bit, and you'd see, they'd turn around and come back up the road. So one day he went out on the road closed sign and went around on the backside of it, hung a big sign on the back of it, said, I told you so. You know. Well, we just don't pay cautions a lot of attention. But Paul here is giving us one that we need to pay very careful attention to. Yeah, when Paul says under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit, be careful. Yeah, you think about it. That's pretty important. You know, the thing about it, most of us who are parents who have small children, what do we say almost every time they walk out of the door? Not goodbye, be careful. Be careful has become goodbye. You know, be careful. When Paul says be careful, he's not being trivial. He doesn't have anything else to say. Paul is giving us a very serious, somber warning. See then, pay attention, be careful, watch your walk. Walk circumspectly. Here's his warning. Somber warning and a suggested walk. He says walk circumspectly. Now, I realize some of you, when you hear the word walk circumspectly, sure, gladly, what's it mean? Yeah, I remember being up, you know, we look at that and we don't get it. I was at the driver's license office a while back, and there was a sign on the wall there that said no lettering, and under it had some Spanish words on it. I didn't know what they meant, but I just, what little Spanish I do recognize, I thought it looked funny. And I was talking to the Spanish pastor here in town. I said, by the way, tell me what these words mean. I told him, and he laughed. He said, where'd you see that at? And I told him. And he said, really? He said, what? And I told him, I said, well, it was right below the sign that said no lettering. I said, what does it mean? He says, means don't walk in circles. You know, whoever tried to interpret and change do not letter into Spanish missed it just a tad. You know, well, some of you walk circumspectly, may as well be don't walk in circles, because you don't have a clue. Some of you don't, listen, that's even something about that word. You almost can't say it without spitting on somebody. I mean, that's just circumspectly. You know, you sound like, you know, Bugs Bunny or somebody trying to spit that word out there. Simply what it means, inspecting would almost be a better word for us. Walk circumspectly. He's talking about walking, looking at every step you take. Walk examining every possible outcome. Be very careful of your walk with the Lord. Watch every step you take. Because someone is always out there trying to trick you, trying to deceive you, trying to cause you to fail in your Christian walk. Someone is watching, so be careful where you put your feet. Remember that song we sang as preschoolers, Little Feet, Be Careful Where You Take Me? Now, that's what Paul was talking about. You know, and I thought about it. I was listening the other day to Stephen Furtick, pastor over in Charlotte, a large church over there, and he was talking about how he he and his staff had had some training about dealing with the media. And if you've ever seen media, if you've ever seen the news, and oftentimes you can tell what's happened. They've went and they stuck the microphone in front of somebody's face. They've asked them 10 questions, and they took their 10 answers and chopped them up and made one answer that had nothing to do with what they asked them to begin with, and made that person look like an absolute clown. Well, he took this, he was talking about how they brought in a trainer, brought in somebody, and said, this is how you deal with the media. You never allow their question to dictate your answer. Never allow your question to dictate your answer. Say, for example, they were talking about a church where there had been where the pastor had a moral failure. He said, I'm going to be the interviewer. And he said, what do you think about so-and-so and the failure? And he said, he began to answer the question. said, well, I really hate that for him and his church. He said, well, you're messed up. You're messed up. Don't let the question dictate your answer. So when they ask you a question like that, you say, well, we here, we're trying to maintain purity. We're trying to be very cautious and careful in all that we do. Don't let that question dictate your answer. Just stay out of that man's business. Stay out of his church. You don't let the question dictate your answer. As I thought about that, you know what? That's really good advice for life. Don't let the world's questions dictate your answer. Don't let the world's roads dictate your path. Just because everyone else is walking down that road doesn't mean you should go that way. Yeah. Just because everybody else is doing it that way. There is not a parent in here who hasn't had their child look at them and go, well, everybody else is doing it. And if you haven't had that done, it's only because your child isn't old enough yet. Give them time. And you know what? I don't know how we learn it as parents, but it's something that parents have been handing down for years. Every parent in the world, when their child looks at them and goes, everybody else is doing it, we look at them and go, if everybody else was jumping off the roof, would you jump with them? Now, I don't know where we learn that answer, but you know, we give them that. And yet as adults, we go out and because everybody else is doing it, we do it. Don't allow the world to dictate your steps. Don't allow the world's question to dictate your answer. Paul says, walk circumspectly. I don't know. I know a lot of his background, and so I can kind of use this illustration, I think, with a good bit of confidence. Most of you in here, male and female, you grew up kind of out in the country a little bit. You grew up running out in the woods, and you've probably been out before, and you got out, and you needed to cross the creek. You with me? Alright. If you hadn't, we'll take you out and push you in after a while. You got out and you needed to cross the creek. And you remember how you crossed the creek, a pretty wide creek, and there's a rock here there, and you stood there and you kind of would look at the creek and you say, kind of test that rock to make sure it was going to stay under your feet, kind of kick it around a little bit, and yeah, you put your foot on that. And then you look around and you say, that's a good one, and you kind of check it. And you really got careful if it was a limb. You kind of, you know, if it was a, you wanted to touch that limb, make sure it wasn't rotten, make sure it wasn't broke, touch that limb, and try to make sure where you're going to put your foot for your next step. You with me? It's exactly what Paul's talking about. Paul says, watch where you put your feet, because everyone else is. Walk circumspectly. Let me suggest, Paul says, that you watch every step you take. See, if you know like I do, if you've ever been out running through the woods and crossed a creek, you know, you're following your buddy, and he goes out and he steps on this rock, this rock, this rock, and he goes across, and you think, well, those must be good rocks. And you step on, what you don't understand is when he stepped on them, he knocked them loose, now you're upside down in the creek. You better check the rock yourself. Just because everybody else stepped on those rocks, if you're a wise man, you'll check them for yourself. You may weigh more than your buddy did. You may have worse shoes than your buddy did. Walk circumspectly, Paul says. You measure every step. Be careful. Solemn warning, suggested walk. Some of you are saying, you know, that sounds like a pretty good path. How am I going to do it? Look what he says. Don't walk like a fool. Walk like a wise man. Where does the Bible say wisdom comes from? From God. That's where he says it comes from. Look back what he said in the opening verse of this chapter. Be an imitator of Christ. You know what that verse tells me? That tells me it doesn't matter which rocks Archie steps on, I'm not to follow Archie across the creek the same way. You know, Paul in another place, when he writes to Timothy, you remember what he says? He says, I've run what race? His race. He says, I've run my race, finished my course. I didn't run their race, his race, our race. I've finished my race. Listen, as we go about our life, Paul is challenging us. Paul is exhorting us. Paul is warning us. See then, that you walk circumspectly. that you measure every step. You may not be Tim Tebow. The media may not be following you. You may not ever get your picture took. Yeah, nobody may care where you eat lunch or what you do or what you say, but I want to tell you something. Somewhere, somebody is watching you. It may be a grandbaby. It may be your child. It may be a co-worker. Let's just go out on a limb, and I'll go this far and say nobody may not care you're alive. Okay? I'm just going to get down to the meat of it. Nobody may not watch you one day. They may not know you exist. Your kids may not care. Nobody may pay you any attention. But let me tell you something. Paul wasn't warning you to watch your step because your children may see. Paul wasn't warning you to watch your steps because your grandkids are watching. Paul was telling you to watch your step because God Himself is watching. And He sees every step you take, and He sees every misstep you make. Walk circumspectly. It's a word you probably haven't heard unless you were reading this chapter. But it's a word I hope will never leave your memory. Walk circumspectly. I remember hearing a story many years ago of a father who went out into the snow one day and was walking along, and he heard a noise behind him. Heard a grunt and a groan, heard a thump. And he looked back, and where he was walking along, taking his normal steps, his little small toddler son was following along behind him, and he'd stand in one of his daddy's footsteps to the next one and to the next one. He says, "Son, what are you doing?" He says, "I'm walking in your footsteps, Daddy." Better walk circumspectly. Someone may be walking in your footsteps. I want to ask you to bow your heads this morning. Watch your walk. How are you handling life? Are you handling it in the wisdom of God? Are you being an imitator of Christ? Are you being a servant of Christ, doing things the way He would? We're not talking about murder and those things we might label as the big sins. Paul says in this verse, be careful of coarse gesturing. Be careful of covetousness. Those things that typically you and I don't even think about. You need to come this morning and kneel at this altar and say, "Lord, help me. Help me to be an example to my son, to my daughter, to my grandchildren. Help me to walk circumspectly. Let me be an imitator of Christ."